Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It is Tuesday afternoon, November 23rd, the Tuesday before Thanksgiving. So we've got light attendance today. I'm going to sort of wing it a little bit. We've been looking, Alejandra and I have been looking at the schedule for Lucas's class and sort of what I wanted to do today. And I was originally going to do some acid-base stuff. Titration. And that's actually, Alejandra, that's actually what these questions are regarding, are acid base and titration. And so that's not far from what we need to do. And maybe what we could do, we've got these two questions, we'll work on these two questions from the homework. And I'll give you an overview of what titration looks like and how it works real quick. And then we'll jump into how to solve these problems. And so I think that's going to be sort of along the line with what I wanted to do today. We can also wrap back around to solubility and looking at solubility rules, because we haven't really covered solubility rules either. So let me start off by getting my iPad hooked up and screen sharing it so you guys can see what I'm doing. And let's hit screen share. That should work and should come up. Okay, so this was question number 10 and question number 13 off of, I guess it's called Chem 101 or something. That's one of the online homework sets that looks like Lucas is using. And these are both titration problems. And what I have done is I have parsed the word problem into how I would start to attack it. I'm going to parse it a little bit more carefully in a minute, but these are off of Chem 101 homework. This is number 10 and number 13. And these are titration questions. So if these are coming up as titration questions, then that means that you already have covered to a degree a little bit of acid and base and hopefully titration. But let's talk a little bit about what titration is. This is one of the things that I thought that I might cover today anyway, was hitting a little bit of titration. And so titration comes generally after we do concentrations. As a subject. And titration really is the measurement of the concentration of an unknown solution. This is the measurement of the concentration of an unknown solution. Using a different solution, using another solution of known concentration. As a ruler. So that's basically what titration is. But even saying that doesn't really justify explaining how titration works. And so it's better explained if I could show it to you in the process of how titration works. And once you get the process down, then we can talk problem solving for that process and how to make all of the information that comes in the text question, make it more approachable and understandable. So that process, what I have that I did several semesters ago was some drawings to set up for titration. And so this is basically the setup of how a titration works. Go all the way back up to ours here. And let's take this process and move it down to the start of a new page. And then we'll bring in all these items and I'll shrink them down a little bit. So this is all the glassware and materials that are needed to conduct the titration. And usually what we have is we have some unknown. So the unknown here would be the unknown acetic acid solution. We have a titrating solution. So this would be our unknown to be measured. This is our known solution that we will call our ruler. And then we have some other equipment that we use. This is a ring stand. We have a burette. I don't know if I'm spelling burette exactly correctly, but close enough. And then a flask that we use. This is an Erlenmeyer flask that we use as a reaction vessel. And then the other really important components that we need, these are needed for the titration. One of them is water, and the other is an indicator. And the indicator tells us when the reaction is completed. And so the essence of it is understanding what the chemical reaction is that's taking place. So acetic acid and sodium hydroxide, the reaction that we're looking at in this one particular case, and there may be many other reactions that we can look at, the reaction is acetic acid, HC2H3O2. This is an aqueous solution, and it is reacting with sodium hydroxide, also in aqueous solution. And they are going to form, I'm going to highlight this proton here, they are going to form products by the double displacement pattern. And so this is what's called an acid-base neutralization reaction. And it follows the same patterns that we've been doing with the double displacement reactions, the solubility reactions, where we had things precipitating out. So what happens is the proton goes with the hydroxide, and the sodium goes with the acetate. And we balance out that equation on the other side, C2H3O2, and H2O. And I'm going to take that H2O, and I'm going to write it this way. I'm going to write it HOH, so that you can see where that acidic proton went. And this is combined. That's our water. That's a liquid, and the other one is aqueous. When these two things add together, they neutralize each other to make what we call a salt and water. And so we'll put this in parentheses as a salt, because a salt is really just an ionic solid or an ionic material. It's no longer an acid, and it's no longer a base. It's been neutralized, and it is just a salt, and water is the other resulting component. This piece over here would be called the acid, and this piece, the base. And as I said, they're going together in a double displacement reaction. So we can think of this way. This is another way to think of it. You can think of it as the proton, and the C2H3O2 as the minus. And you can think about these as cation and anion, and the sodium and the hydroxide also as the cation and anion. And so when they swap partners, what I do is I take just the single sodium with the acetate and we mix them together on this side. Sodium plus and C2H3O2 minus. And if they needed to be balanced at this point, if the ionic charges were not one-to-one, then I would add more cations or more anions in order to balance it out. And then I would have to go and I would have to balance the entire chemical reaction. Fortunately, they're one-to-one in this example, and I really don't need to do anything. The other part of that is I'm taking the proton and hydroxide, and they're going together one-to-one. And so that's how they are all balancing out in terms of swapping partners. Okay, but now I have a balanced chemical reaction. And the question is, well, how do I do this in a titration? So let's come back to this chemical reaction after we actually go and do the titration and show how a titration looks. Once you see it, it makes it a lot easier to understand what is technically going on in solution. So what we're going to do is, number one, we're going to obtain titration process. Number one, obtain sample of acid to titrate. So literally what we do is we take this pump where the acid sits. And that thing is set to dispense a specific volume. It's set at the 10 mil mark. And we take the Erlenmeyer flask and we grab 10 milliliters of that solution. Usually you have to tilt this a little bit and we grab it. I don't know why. My app doesn't want to drop things sometimes when I drop them. There we go. So what we would do is we would push down on this guy and we would dispense 10 milliliters. So it's set, you can see the mark right here that it's set to 10.00. And we're saying unknown acid. We know what the acid is, we just don't know what concentration it is. And now what we have in here is 10 milliliters of this unknown acid. And we'll say that this is the C2H3O2. So exactly 10 milliliters have gone into that. Then what we do is 10 milliliters is actually a fairly small volume, and it is not easy to titrate with just 10 milliliters. But when we did this, what we did is total moles of acid of C2H3O2 are set when the acid was added. Sorry, my dogs are going to bark. So the total moles of acetic acid were set when we pumped this thing and added this, and those moles will not change throughout this experiment. What we're going to do is we're going to increase the volume to make it easier to titrate, but adding water to it does not change the number of moles of acetic acid that are actually in the solution. And so we can add as much water as we want or as little water as we want, and it doesn't change how much acid is already in this container. So the next thing that we do is we add water to increase volume. To make titration easier. So what we do now is we take this guy and we take that water bottle and we add some additional water into it. And as I said, the amount of water that we add is not critical. It's just to increase the amount that's in there. And it doesn't change the number of moles. So once we do that, the sample is now ready to titrate. So we've increased the volume here. Usually we add somewhere in the neighborhood of plus maybe 20 milliliters so that we have a total of 30 milliliters volume total. But it could be plus or minus 5. So it can be a little bit more or a little bit less. Once we do that, the sample is almost ready to titrate. The next thing that we do is we add in an indicator. So what does the indicator do? The indicator in this thing is called phenolphthalein. And phenolphthalein is a large molecule. We don't need to really know its shape or its structure or what it looks like. What we need to know is what it does. So pH is a measure of the acidity of a solution. And at pH 7, we call this neutral. This is when the amount of hydrogen ions is exactly equal to the number of hydroxide ions. When the pH goes down low, pH down to 0, anything on this side we say is acidic. Actually, I'm going to move it over. It doesn't matter where I put it. It's just going from 0 to higher numbers. Makes more sense. This is the acidic range. This means that there is more hydrogen ions. And pH 14 and anywhere in here in these numbers, this is basic. This means that there is more hydroxide. And what's really cool about phenolphthalein is that on this side of the scale, when phenolphthalein is under basic conditions and it's exposed to basic pHs, phenolphthalein turns pink. So when there's more hydroxide, it turns pink. And when there is more acid, it is colorless. So I can't actually put a color there to show you what it would be. The phenolphthalein is entirely colorless. And what happens is when you transition and you go from acidic to basic and you hit that pH 7, where the protons are exactly equal to the hydroxide, this is what we're trying to achieve in a titration. We're trying to find out, we're going to add hydroxide until it exactly equals acid. And we want to know where they are exactly equal. Well, where they are equal is when the phenolphthalein transitions from colorless to pink, and the faintest hint of pink that sticks around for 30 seconds is an endpoint, tells you when the hydroxide exactly equals the proton. And so what we're looking for with this indicator is that right now there's acid in here. So when we put the indicator in, it's not going to change color at all. It's going to stay entirely colorless. It's going to look just like water. But as we add in the hydroxide and we start to titrate this and we start to do the chemical reaction, it's going to consume protons. And at some point, the protons are going to be exactly equal to the hydroxide. And at that point, when we tip over with even just a couple of molecules of hydroxide, this whole solution will start to turn this bright pink. And that's when we stop the titration, and that's when we know that we're done. So that's our visual indication, and that's why we need an indicator. Otherwise, you couldn't see an acid-base reaction as it was proceeding. There's nothing to visually see without the indicator present. So we add a few drops of this indicator. And so what we need to do is we need to take our solution that we're setting up, and we need to grab our indicator. And usually what we do is we put the phenolphthalein in these little pipettes in this cup. And I'll see if I can grab one of them. Close enough. And we just take and we add in a few drops of the phenolphthalein. Okay, so now the solution is ready to go. We mix that up, we let that become a little bit homogeneous. And the next thing we do is we prepare the burette and the base. So this is step number four. Prepare the ruler. The ruler here is the sodium hydroxide that is our titrating solution. It is this, we call it a standard. And a standard means that it is of known concentration. It's been measured very accurately. So here what we're going to need is we're going to need the burette and the ring stand. We'll get the ring stand in a minute. Let me copy that. And I'll need that sodium hydroxide solution. So we'll get that in a minute too. And the sodium hydroxide solution, when we get the burette is normally full of water and we store it full of water. Also, the burettes, I don't know if you can see, it's really hard. I've made it very small because burettes are tiny when you read them. It starts at zero at its top, and at its bottom, it has 50. So the scale on this is in reverse. It goes backwards of what we would normally think. Normally, when you're measuring volumes, you generally think that the volume at the top, when it's full, would be the measurement of the highest volume. But in this case, a burette is made to measure a volume that has been dispensed, not a volume that is in the container. So the scale actually runs in reverse. And what we do is we get all the water out, and then we take some of this solution and we add it to the burette. We rinse the burette, we throw that away. We want to rinse all the water out of the burette, and then we fill the burette. Usually we fill it by just pouring the material. So we take the lid off of this guy and we pour it by hand without a funnel most of the time, because funnels just add contaminants and get things dirty. And so literally what we do is we take this and pour the contents of this in, and we try to fill it up all the way to the top of the burette. And again, this material looks just like water. And so what we see in the burette isn't anything different than water, really. And we fill it so that the meniscus sits right at that 0, 0 mark. And then we take and we place that into this apparatus, which is a ring stand. And this will hold it in place for us while we go through and do the titration. So it has a couple of little holders here, and we generally set it inside those holders and it pinches it and holds it in place. Okay, so now we're set up really to go through and do the titration. And Now what we do is we record the volume and start the titration process. So volume initial equals 0.00 milliliters and start titration. So that titration, as we do it, we generally add the sodium hydroxide solution really carefully, slowly. So this now is my sodium hydroxide, and it was of a known concentration, 0.5064 moles per liter. And I am taking this guy, which I have now added in my indicator. So this is the HC2H3O2 acid. It is of an unknown molarity, but I know its volume. I know that it started off at 10.00 milliliters, and that's what it started off. And it also has water and indicator. And now I'm adding this solution to this guy. And as I add it, the chemical reaction is taking place. And the sodium hydroxide that goes in starts to react with some of the acetic acid, and it's producing water and sodium acetate. And as long as there's some acid that is left in this flask, it will stay colorless. But the minute that all of the acid is consumed and a little bit of extra sodium hydroxide goes into it, at that point, this container will turn pink. And that is the end point of the titration. So this whole thing continues. And we will continue that until I'm going to go in and erase partial, small eraser. We use up a lot of this sodium hydroxide. And what we're going to do is we're going to measure precisely how much sodium hydroxide we've used at the point where the solution turns pink. Now that's a pretty bright pink that I've drawn. We really want the faintest hint of pink that we can get. But as soon as this turns pink, this is where the hydroxide that has been added is equal to the HC2H3O2. And it's equal in terms of moles. The number of moles of this that were added were equal to the number of moles that we started with. And our volume is going to come from reading this. This is the volume that was actually used in the titration. Okay, so now we record that second volume. 6, record final volume of sodium hydroxide. So volume final might equal, in this case, let's say that it is 18 point, let me see, I had a measurement here. Grab it real quick. Gotta go through and find the right document. Not that one, not that one, not that one. Oh my God, it's buried. It's one of the lectures that I gave. Might be this one. I'm just gonna go with it. All right, we're just gonna call it 18.23 milliliters. We'll work it out and then I'll fix it in the document later. Okay, so what has happened? What did we do? We did a chemical reaction where we took acetic acid, HC2H3O2. This was aqueous dissolved in water. We added 10 milliliters, but its concentration was unknown. To that, we added sodium hydroxide. This was our ruler. And we started, the volume initial was at 0.00 milliliters. The volume final was at 23 milliliters. So the volume total equaled 18.23 milliliters. And the molarity of this was equal to 5064 moles per liter. These guys reacted to form sodium acetate and water. And we stopped this when this reaction, when equal number of moles of sodium hydroxide equaled the number of moles of acetic acid. So we can say that these guys here, if we look at it this way, the moles of HC2H3O2 was exactly equal to the moles of sodium hydroxide. And so what we're going to do is we're going to use this information, the volume and the molarity, to figure out how many moles of sodium hydroxide was that. The moles of sodium hydroxide are going to tell me how many moles of acetic acid I had. And together with the volume, I will then be able to calculate out the molarity and find out what the molarity is. That's what a titration is. And so usually when I draw out a titration, I always draw out the chemical reaction and I put the information underneath it. And that's part of my parsing of the problem. And then I can attack the problem and start to figure out what it is that they want me to find. Now, sometimes they want you to find the volume. Sometimes they want you to find the molarity. The two problems that we were looking at that Alejandra had just given us, they're wanting me to find a volume, but it's the same process. I'm going to show you both ways. So let's finish out this one that I just did. And then I'll go and I'll attack those other two problems and show you how to write them out. Okay, so what we do here is a stoichiometry problem. We have volume and we have molarity. And what we are going to try to do is we're going to try to find the molarity over here. Now, I like to set this up in all one equation, but you could think of this as step one, step two, step three, and finally step four. So step one, find the number of moles of sodium hydroxide. I'll do it this way, and then I'll put it all into one and show you how I do it all in one. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with 18.23 milliliters of sodium hydroxide. I'm going to convert that into liters. So for every 1,000 milliliters of sodium hydroxide, I get 1 liter of sodium hydroxide. And then I use that molarity to convert the liters into a number of moles. For every 1 liter of sodium hydroxide,
I get 0.5064 moles sodium hydroxide. So we'll figure out how many moles that is. 18.23 divided by 1,000 times 0.5064. So that's how many moles we've got. We've got 0.00923167 moles. And I'm not going to round it yet. And that's moles of sodium hydroxide. Now I go step two through the stoichiometry. And I take the moles of sodium hydroxide and convert them into moles of acetic acid. So to do this part, what I do is I start off with that 0.00923 and change moles of sodium hydroxide. And I multiply using the stoichiometry from the balanced chemical equation. It's one mole of sodium hydroxide for every one mole of HC2H3O2. Now, where did I get that? I got that right here. This is 1 to 1 to 1 to 1 in the balanced chemical equation. So if I take and say, all right, here's my moles of that and my moles of sodium hydroxide, then that is one mole of sodium hydroxide to one mole of acetic acid. And that says that these are equal 0.00923167 moles now of HC2H3O2. Now, step three is to take, and it's actually, there's not four steps, there's actually, should just be one more step here, is to take the volume and divide the moles by the volume to get it into moles per liter. So step three, calculate moles per liter of the HC2H3O2. So to do that, what we do is we take the number of moles, 0.00923167. These are the moles of HC2H3O2. And we divide that by 10.00 milliliters. And this was the volume of the HC2H3O2 solution. But we can't be in milliliters. We have to be in liters. So we have to convert that into, for every 1,000 milliliters of solution, we get 1 liter of solution. And that will cancel out the milliliters and get me into moles per liter. And so now we'll take this number and divide it by 10 and multiply it by 1,000. That did not do what I expected it to do. I'm gonna do answer divided by 10. Times 1,000. And that gives me my molarity, 0.9231672 moles per liter HC2H3O2. Now, sig figs real quick. We go all the way back up to the beginning. Note that we were at 4 sig figs here. This is a definition. This was 4 sig figs. So this was good out to 1, 2, 3, 4. We were good out to that place value, 4 sig figs. This value had 4. That value had 4. This was exact because they're molar ratios. That means that I came in with 4 here and I'm at 4 in my volume there. This is a definition. So I get to keep all 4 sig figs out here and I'm rounding to that position. So my molarity equals 0.9232 moles per liter of HC2H3O2. That's a titration. We used the sodium hydroxide solution to go through and measure the molarity of the acetic acid solution. So now you've seen the entire process, and hopefully maybe it makes a little bit more sense in what that process actually looks like. Let's take the other questions that were similar titration questions and let's address them. They would have been done by the exact same process. So I'm gonna grab number 10 here. And I wrote this out in my own sort of shorthand. I'm gonna take it and write it out longhand and show you how I would parse it. Okay, so this is not acetic acid, this is citric acid in this problem. Citric acid is what's called a triprotic acid. And the triprotic refers to the fact that there are three acidic protons. The acidic ones, you say, well, what about these over here? The acidic ones are always written on the left-hand side. So when a molecule starts with a proton on the left-hand side like that, that's a way that, as chemists, we indicate that those are acidic protons. And so the first thing, and I think in the problem, they gave us the balanced chemical equation, but I'm gonna rewrite the balanced chemical equation and show you how I would do that. It is H3C6H5O7 plus sodium hydroxide, both of these starting off aqueous. These are going to go to make a salt where I am going to combine sodium with C6H5O7 3-. And so to balance this, it's going to require 3 sodiums. That's going to give me 3 pluses and 3 minuses. So I will write Na3C6H5O7. This is going to be aqueous, and I'm going to make water as the byproduct. Now, water came together with 1 proton and 1 hydroxide. So when I go to balance this, this is really easy to balance these types of equations. Notice the 3 here and the 3 here. When it's triprotic and there are 3 protons, it's going to require 3 hydroxides to make 3 waters. And so that 3 propagates through and it goes 3, 3. Oops, that should have gone down to the subscript, sorry. 3 down to the subscript and 3 up into the coefficient. That 3 follows through all over the place because hydroxide is a single monobasic reacting with a triprotic, and they react in a 3-to-1 ratio, 3 sodium hydroxide to 1 of these. And so this makes the balanced chemical equation. And now I'll use that balanced chemical equation to take and write this information under it and parse it out. So I'm going to rewrite the equation one more time and then parse it out. H3C6H5O7 plus 3 sodium hydroxide. Going to make sodium citrate, C6H5O7 plus 3 waters. And they give me the information that says that this starts off at 0.200 molar. And I don't know how many milliliters of that. Nope, it says 25. My holy eraser. Back to the whole thing. So this is 25.00 milliliters. And my sodium hydroxide started off at 0.750 molar. and it wants to know how many milliliters it will take to react. Now, remember that the idea is that I want the moles of this guy and the moles of hydroxide to be equal in terms of the moles of the H+. And these are reacting in a 3-to-1 ratio. So we could do this as a multi-step problem again. We could, and but this time, because of where the unknown is, I'll have to work a different direction. These guys together are going to tell me the moles of H3C6H5O7. From the moles there, I am going to go to the moles of sodium hydroxide. Those moles of sodium hydroxide then together with the molarity will tell me how many milliliters. And so this is going to be step one. This is going to be step two. This is going to be step three. And it looks like I'm doing step four, but I'm using these two together. So it's really one step there that's step three. Again, I could put these all into one equation and do it. Maybe I'll do that right after we do this and I'll show you how I get the same thing. But let me go through and do it this way first. So step one, find moles H3C6H5O7, 25.00 milliliters of this solution, H3C6H5O7. Multiply, first, before you use the molarity, you need to convert it into liters. So for every 1,000 milliliters of H3C6H5O7, I get 1 liter. And then for that, I need to then convert those liters into moles, and that's where the molarity comes in. So now for every 1 liter of solution, H3C6H5O7, I get 0.200 moles. H3C6H5O7. So that's going to give me those moles. 25 divided by 1,000 times 0.2. That's 0.005 moles. H3C6H5O7. Okay, step two, convert those into moles of sodium hydroxide. This is the stoichiometry step. I think we can fit it here. Stoichiometry, moles H3C6H5O7 to moles sodium hydroxide. This is going to require us to use the stoichiometry, the coefficients in this balanced chemical equation. This is going to ask me to use the 1-to-3 ratio. All right, so let's do that. 0.005 moles H3C6H5O7. It takes patience just to write all these things out. For every 1 mole of H3C6H5O7, I get 3 moles OH. And that's it. It's just the 1-to-3 ratio. So what colors did I make it? Sodium hydroxide was blue and green for the citric acid. All right, so this is going to be 0.015 moles of sodium hydroxide. And then step three is to use the moles and the volume or the molarity to calculate the volume. Use moles, sodium hydroxide, and molarity, sodium hydroxide, to find milliliters sodium hydroxide. So now what I do is I take those moles, 0.015 moles sodium hydroxide, and multiply using the molarity as a conversion factor. Moles will go in the denominator and liters in the numerator. The number of moles comes from the molarity of the solution that was given to us, 0.750. And then they wanted milliliters, so we have to convert this into milliliters. And then we're done. So that's going to be 0.015 times, divided by 0.750, 0.02. That's milliliters of sodium hydroxide. Okay, but we're not done because we got to go back and we got to work our sig figs. So let's see what we had. We had 4, definition. We had 3. That means that this is going to come out to 3. It's not 3 as drawn. 3 would be 0.00500 moles would be 3. But I'm coming in here with 3. These are exact. That means that I'm going to have 3 out here. So I'm going to have a 0 on there to get my 3. And then this came in at 3. This is 3. This is a definition. So this will have to be at 3. That means that it's going to be equal to 0.0200 milliliters sodium hydroxide required. And that would be the answer to number 10. Let me show you how to put that all into one using all of these steps. So to put it all into one equation, sometimes it can be a little bit more confusing trying to do it all in one equation. But essentially what we're doing is we're starting off by taking these milliliters of acetic acid. I'm hearing a phone go off or something, but I think that's like my dogs. I don't know what I'm hearing. So let's see how we can put this all into one. We take the molarity and the number of milliliters, and we want to find volume over here. Now, maybe I don't want to do this all in one. Maybe that's just going to be too confusing. Maybe this is just the easier way to do it, just breaking up into steps. Seems to work easy enough this way. I could write it all out, but I think I'm just going to confuse you in standard titrations if I do it that way. Let's take number 13. Let's break number 13 down, and then we'll take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll look at how to do some more titration. So let's go grab, was it at the beginning, number 13. This is the same sort of problem. It's also a 3-to-1 ratio. It's almost identical. It just has different numbers.
You did mention that it might be confusing for us, but the homework does ask for the whole problem.
To put it all into one?
Yeah.
Really?
So, yeah, yeah. So
brutal. Okay.
We can try it.
Okay, I'll do
next
it.
Next one, whatever works. Yeah.
No. We can do it on this next one. I'll show you. It's just normally I don't put them. Normally for titrations, I have a very standard process that I normally take the volume of the acid and the volume of the base, and I put them in specific order and then calculate it all out using the numerator and denominator and roadmaps in the numerator and roadmaps in the denominator. This one turns that around a little bit because I'm actually looking for a volume rather than a concentration. So I just need to think for a second how what I need to put in the numerator and what I need to put in the denominator in order to make that all work out. We took the volume here, walked through our stoichiometry, and then it's just a matter of putting in these other conversion factors. So I don't need to do anything different. I just need to start with the volume of the asset. I'll show you the roadmap. The roadmap's going to look like this. All in one roadmap. So what we're going to do is we're going to start off with the milliliters of H3C6H507. You're going to convert those into the liters of H3C6H507. You'll convert those liters into a number of moles, H3C6H507. Those moles will get converted into a moles of sodium hydroxide. Those moles of sodium hydroxide then are converted into a number of liters of sodium hydroxide. And then finally, those liters are converted into milliliters. That's what it would look like all in one. And each one of these conversion factors, this is 1,000 milliliters equals a liter. Same thing over here, 1,000 milliliters equals 1 liter. The conversion factor here is the molarity of the acetic acid solution. This is the stoichiometry, meaning the coefficients. This is the molarity of the sodium hydroxide. And then finally, you're into the 1,000 to 1 SI conversion. So that's how it's going to look if we were to do it all in one. And then we could follow through. And we started off with 25 milliliters. Now, it's probably going to take more than one line. So I'm going to write a little bit small as I get going, but I'm still going to take more than one line, I'm sure. H3C6H507, convert it into 1,000 milliliters, H3C6H507. To 1 liter. Using the molarity now, which was 0.2. So for every 1 liter of H3C6H507, I get 0.200 moles. H3C6H507. Now through the stoichiometry, for every 1 mole, H3C6H507, I get 3 moles of sodium hydroxide. Those moles of sodium hydroxide now get converted by the concentration of sodium hydroxide. So for every 0.750 moles of sodium hydroxide, I get 1 liter of sodium hydroxide. And then finally, that last conversion factor, I'll write it down here. The last conversion factor is that for every 1 liter of sodium hydroxide, I get 1,000 milliliters. And that would be the whole line. So if I go through and I track what I'm canceling, milliliters here, liters here, the moles of citric acid, the moles of sodium hydroxide, and finally the liters of sodium hydroxide, and I'm in milliliters in my numerator. And we could go through four sig figs, definition, three, exact, three, definition. And notice that the thousands, thousand in the denominator, thousand in the numerator, they cancel each other out. So literally, this is 25 times 0.2 times 3 divided by 0.75. And that's it. Except something's off. 25 times 0.2 times 3 because I got 20 milliliters and that's not what I got last time. Oh, so I have a mistake in the previous one somewhere because 20 milliliters sounds actually accurate. I must have done a math calculation error. I might have multiplied instead of dividing when I did this. I think this is supposed to be 3 sig figs, and I think it's supposed to be 20.0 milliliters. And I think that's what we just came out with here. Actually, good thing you asked me to do it over again, all in one. Let me check that calculation. Come on, calculator, come on back. Oh, calculator went to this side. So it should have been 0.015 divided by 0.750 times 1,000. That's what I missed last time. I missed the multiplication of the 1,000 last time. So it is 20.0 milliliters sodium hydroxide required. So that's how you put it all in one. It's a fairly... Definitely,
yeah, a lot of work, but the steps make more sense for sure.
I think the steps, you know, when you're first learning it, mm-hmm. I think the steps are critical because it shows you how you're using the pieces of information and it allows you to see it in small, simpler roadmaps. And that's mm-hmm. generally a lot easier to do at this level. But there's
yeah,
no,
I definitely agree.
Yeah, but there's no reason why you couldn't put it all in one.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And that next problem that we were going to do this guy here, same thing, very similar equation, H3PO4, triprotic phosphoric acid reacting with sodium hydroxide will require three sodium hydroxides for the three protons. It will go to make sodium phosphate, again, three there, plus three waters. So there's the balanced chemical equation. And they're telling me molarity, 0.250 molar, and a volume, which is 72.0 milliliters, a molarity here, which is 0.800 molar, and a question mark on my milliliters of how much sodium hydroxide it's going to require. So the same process. We start here, and we convert this into a moles of H3PO4. From there, we go to a moles of sodium hydroxide using the 3-to-1 ratio. And then with the molarity, we can then calculate out first the liters and then the milliliters. So there's our steps. And it's going to look the same. It's going to be milliliters H3PO4 to liters H3PO4 to moles H3PO4 through the mole bridge to the moles of sodium hydroxide to the liters of sodium hydroxide, to the milliliters. And there's our entire roadmap. So we could put it all into one in this one as well. You're starting off with 72.0 milliliters H3PO4 converted into liters. To 1 liter. Use the molarity to push it into moles. So for every 1 liter of H3PO4, we've got 0.250 moles. For every 1 mole stoichiometry now of H3PO4, it takes 3 moles of sodium hydroxide. Now with the molarity, we go to liters. So for every 0.800 moles, I get 1 liter. And then back out from liters to milliliters. I just went the reverse way. That should be 1 liter in the denominator and 1,000 milliliters in the numerator. And that should do it. So this one is 72 times 0.25 times 3 divided by 0.8. Snuck my previous answer in there. Okay, 72 times 0.25 times 3 divided by 0.8. That should get it 67.5 milliliters of sodium hydroxide required. And we'll check sig figs and make sure we're coming out at 3. 3, definition. 3, exact, 3, definition, we're at 3, done. Okay. Might be a good spot for a break for a few minutes. And then I was going to put together, I had a titration assignment that was going to go along with this. This is a good time to go ahead and put that titration assignment up and just show you. We showed you the first calculation. I showed you exactly how to do it. I'll just walk you through the rest of the data after the break, and then I'll put that assignment up, and we'll have a titration assignment for you to do in lab. It's just going to be the same thing that we did in the first example, doing 2 more trials of that, averaging it out, and then there's a few questions that follow up along with it. So it's a fairly short assignment to go through and do. And if there's any other questions after that, we can address them. So let's take a break for a few minutes. We'll come back in 5 minutes. Let's come back at 2:25. Sound like a plan? All right. Put some music on for 5 minutes.
Today, now, and now you want to give it all up for some other guy. Well, I beg you.
All right. California Honey Drops are so good, but their songs are so long. I'm going to go ahead and stop that. Also, there's some garden work going on outside, so my dogs are going to be barky. We'll see how that goes. All right, so what I had for you, what I was going to show you is a titration experiment. And I have it in two ways. One is the actual experiment, which I think I can bring in here just so that we have it in the notes. And so this will add in, it's a bunch of pages, but in addition to this, so here's the acid-based titration. This is the, you can't see what I'm doing yet, screen share. This is essentially the experiment that we do in person in lab. And what I'm gonna wind up doing is I'm just gonna give you the data for it. So here's the titration itself and the write-up for the experiment. It shows how to go through and do the calculation. It talks about how to use the burette, how to clean it, how to fill it, shows the experiment that I was drawing by hand and showing you how to do and explaining how that experiment actually works, how to read it. I mean, all the instructions are in here on how to do the titration. And then it gives you the experimental procedure, which I've gone through and sort of documented already, and then some questions for analysis. So what I have done is I have gone through, and I was trying to see where I had them. I have a write-up that shows all of the data that was acquired during this experiment, and then asks you to do the write-up portion of it. And it has the titration with all the volumes and everything that's gone into it. And then what you do is you take the three trials. It is three trials of the same experiment with the different volumes. And you will get a slightly different molarity each time it's measured. It's just every time you do a measurement, we always get a slightly different answer every time we do that experiment and do that measurement. You take those three answers and average them out to come out with the average molarity. And then there's a few questions to answer. And so I've got all of that write-up that I'll put into Canvas that will just give you a little bit more experience in going through and doing these calculations with titration. Okay, so that was the whole component that I had wanted to do today, or at least one of them. I had several things prepared in case we went in different tracks, but that'll give you a short exercise on titration and these types of calculations that we were just doing. And as I said, you could do them all in one, or you can do them stepwise. And that's really up to your choice on how you want to do them. I wanted to share these in the notes, but there's more here in this note than I want to share. And so I'm just going to get them. Actually, I can do this. Let me think. This is page 12 through 13. Let me get them. I'll just get them in the notes. That'll be easier. And then I'll also put them in Canvas. So this is from 12 to 13. Open in preview, and then I can share it and bring it in. That'll be easier. So you can see exactly what I'm talking about. It's going to have the wrong date on it, but that's okay. Okay, so now down at the bottom, what I've got is the titration lab exercise. And so this is the write-up of what was done and the measurements that were taken. And I said, we just did this one in class, but I had a slightly different number here for the one that we just did. And so you can go through and you can do these three. And then here, notice that we use the burette. We never entirely drain the burette in one experiment. So we can go from one experiment to the next without having to reset the burette. So when we started, the initial reading was zero. and the final reading was 16.32. Notice that on the second trial, you start at 16.32 and you go to 32.30. So the difference there is that this one only took 15.98 milliliters to complete. So that's your volume of sodium hydroxide. In the third trial, you start at the 32.30 and you finish at the 48.94. So the difference between the two will tell you how much sodium hydroxide was used in this experiment. And for each one of these, you will go and you will compute out what the molarity of the acetic acid solution is in each one of these. You'll take the three trials, you'll add them together and divide by three, and you'll get the average molarity. And an example of the calculation is shown here, how to calculate the percent by mass of the acetic acid in vinegar. So there's a little bit of help here from one of the questions that's in the lab that I'm going to put up online. It just shows you the roadmap and how to get there and how to go through and calculate it. But these three trials will be exactly as what we just did in lecture. So it's not a whole lot of work that you're being asked to do here. Okay, let me think if there's anything else that I want to tell you. And I'm kind of running out of ideas, unless there's more questions, unless Alejandro, you had any other things you were stuck on that you wanted me to take a look at.
All right, now I think I'm pretty set.
Okay. I think let's call it here today then. Give it an easy week. And hopefully that was helpful with the information that you guys are dealing with, and supportive of what you're doing in lecture right now. And when we come back next week, I think that either we'll do a little bit more acid base in pHs and understanding how to do pH calculations, if that's where you go, or it may be that we do more in what Lucas is calling the combined stoichiometries, which I think is really using concentrations in stoichiometry calculations, which is really what we're doing here. That's really what this is sort of a combined stoichiometry, but I'll check in with everybody next week and we'll see what's appropriate to do next week. Okay. I think that's about it. I'm going to cut the recording here and Alejandro, if you have more questions and you want to hang out, you're welcome to, and if not, I'll see you guys next week.